Radio 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Officials near San Antonio say they found the bodies of 27 people who died in flash flooding, and many more are missing, including between 23 and 27 girls who were at a sleepaway summer camp. Weather Prediction Center meteorologist Alliston Santarelli says some parts of Texas are getting heavy rain today.
The rainfall today has been luckily to the north and east of Kerr County.
Texas Congressman Chip Roy.
Today, the focus is on the people, making sure we find, you know, if there's just one or two or 10 of those little girls or anybody that are still alive, we got to go find them.
We may be just days away from more tariff-related uncertainty. Here's CBS's Willie James Inman at the White House.
The president says he could send up to 12 letters to different nations on Monday notifying them of the new tariff rate on their goods. The White House faces a self-imposed deadline of Wednesday to negotiate dozens of trade deals.
Hamas is indicating it will accept a ceasefire deal in Gaza, but not without conditions. From Jerusalem, the BBC's Sebastian Usher has details on the changes the group is demanding.
The amendments that Hamas wants do seem very similar to what they've wanted previously, that's been seen as unacceptable by Israel, by the Israeli government, and to some extent by the US. That is essentially having a precondition that there should be a complete end to the war in Gaza from the start, that that has to be the goal, and that Israeli troops have to be withdrawn.
Seattle is famous for its Pike Place Fish Market salmon toss, but not for flying fish. But at the Mariners T-Mobile Park yesterday, it was raining salmon.
Fish falling from the sky, right behind the Mariners dugout before the game Friday, nearly nailing a TV cameraman.
A salmon came flying out of the sky.
Seattle Sports 710 play-by-play man Rick Riz saw it.
And the salmon almost landed on this poor guy's head.
A falcon with a freshly caught silver salmon pursued by a bald eagle.
The falcon was trying to get away from the eagle, and the falcon let go of the fish and landed right behind our camera guy.
Then a flock of seagulls got into the game.
Then went after the eagle. There was a little battle going up there above the ballpark.
Thomas Brock for CBS News, Seattle.
It happened 50 years ago today, July 5th, 1975. Arthur Ashe became the first and still the only black man to win a Wimbledon singles title.
A stunning triumph for Arthur Ashe, whose tactical astuteness and ability to vary the pace of his shots proved too much for the power game of Jimmy Connors.
It would be Ashe's last Grand Slam victory. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Barr. If you're spending more time outside this holiday weekend, experts are warning about a new breed of tick and the bizarre allergy it can spread with just one bite. It's known as the Lone Star tick, and the bug is finding its way to Wisconsin from the southeast part of the country. Doctors with Mayo Clinic say they're already starting to see more patients with what's known as alpha-gal syndrome. It's an allergy to red meat after being bit by this type of tick. And these ticks aren't just in the woods.
You go back 30 years ago and you'd think of, a hunter, an avid hiker out in the woods. Now we're starting to see ticks pop up sometimes in backyards in suburban areas and stuff like that. And that's a concern.
PJ Leash is an entomologist at the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. And though this new tick is spreading, he still considers Lyme disease from a deer tick the bigger concern. Leash also suggests using insect spray, wearing long sleeves and pants, and always checking for ticks after spending time outside. Are you noticing farmers spending more time outside working in the fields? The weather in some parts of the state is challenging and may not mean all the corn crops are knee-high by the 4th of July. The latest crop report shows farmers across Wisconsin had just 3.5 days with workable conditions during the last week. And did you know our state is ranked second for having the most organic farms in the country? Officials with Naturally Wisconsin and the Food Finance Institute are starting a new program to support those efforts and say there's also growing consumer demand for natural, healthy, and sustainable products. The group's already working with more than 800 food-focused entrepreneurs from all across the state. You can find more news anytime at civicmedia.us. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and thunderstorms today, some with pockets of heavy rainfall, highs in the mid-80s. For tonight, showers and thunderstorms, again, some with heavy rain, a low around 62. Clearing out, sunny for Sunday with a high near 79. Monday, mostly sunny, 79. Currently, 78 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll review the holiday weekend. Hope yours has been good. Also, Kristen Lyerly, John and Gordy, and Jane Matinere will join us as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Like a hammer, like Thor's hammer. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Oh, Saturday, one full hour with my two favorite dude fellas, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci and Jacob, chairman of the board. So good to see you guys, you know, hanging out, just shooting, you know, getting ready to shoot the breeze with two buddies, you know, talking the stuff that we like to talk about, educated educators talking education. Jacob, how you doing?
Tim, I'm doing great today.
Nice.
Because I'm just excited to finally have a full hour of my favorite blue-collar scholars, because I've been doing these podcasts with you guys. That's only half, and I can't do it. So yeah, I'm excited to see what you guys have to say here today.
I always want more. Well, Johnny, tell it, man. What's going on with your world?
Hey, not much. You know, it's the end of the month. We're getting up on the end of June, edging up on July. I like July a lot, so I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's summer. It's officially summer. None of this summer talk like we had back in Memorial Day being unofficial. Beginning of summer and then school's out. Oh, it's summer. No, it's actually we have zoomed past the eclipse. Oh, or the solstice, not the eclipse. We've eclipsed the solstice. Yeah. And we're you know, it's Saturday word day though. No, but I'm excited. Lots of stuff is happening. I'm grateful, Tim. I don't know whether it's just my news sources. You know, I'm a little bit doing a double triple take this Saturday morning. The coffee and the newspaper. Yeah, I still get the newspaper. I'm that guy. It's weekend only, though. I only get the newspapers on the weekend. But I was thumbing through, and then I got online like everybody else because I thought, well, it probably just didn't print and it's online. But I'm grateful that, you know, it doesn't seem to be too much more, at least at the time we are, Tim, coming together on this, too much more developing out of, you know, things with Iran. I'll admit, last week I was pretty heightened about stuff. I was pretty, you know, a roller coaster of emotions, mostly around frustration, you know, reminders of when we were younger and you know, the bombings on Iraq and different things that led us into, you know, decades of conflict.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some war historians may be even able to correct me and by my flippant decades of conflict. They may even say it was
the
more
war on terror, Johnny, you're referring to.
Well, I mean, just the many fronts of that brought us into Afghanistan. And, you know, it was just a lot of my early teaching years and my high school years. And, you know, we talked, Jacob and I are, you know, we recorded a show for next week, little future teaser, where I talk about, you know, the anxious generation. And we did a lot of talking about, you know, what what do we do coming out of college these days? And it's not a show where we're like, well, kids these days. I thought, you know, it was really thoughtful discussion around things are really different. Mm. And we all aren't as knowledgeable as we used to be, or as we maybe could be, about what comes after high school or even college. It's a very anxious moment for a lot of young people.
I know the answer to that.
What is it?
Death and taxes.
Well, hopefully for that to happen, it has to happen in the other.
I know. I always like when people always say that they're
taxes
like
taxes and then death
and taxes. I'm like, okay, if it really goes in that direction, well, then we're a tax-free society.
They're softening the blow, though, Tim. They're like death, and you're like, oh man, but taxes? Okay, taxes. I guess I can deal
nothing
with.
Nothing more optimistic than you know what comes after that? Death and taxes.
Youth today. No, Johnny, you're thinking about that though too, the war on terror, and you say, like, you know, I'm actually, you know, a little bit older than you. My first year of teaching actually was the beginning truly of Operation Desert Shield, that then turned into, that was that first when, you know, the takeover of Kuwait.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of push, and remember that happening. That was my very first year of teaching. I was in Southern Virginia, right outside of Norfolk. And you know what? A lot of activity down in that area when that happened. Lots of flyovers over our school building, F-15s, F-16s, whatever you name it. And kind of a freaky time thinking like, whoa, what's happening? You know, luckily, whatever they want to say, that was kind of bloodless is a bad thing, but you know how quickly it was overcome, and the Kuwaiti people seemed to be very happy that we did the work that we did. And afterwards, Lee Greenwood wrote a song, and the world was wonderful again.
Yeah, that's exactly how I remember it.
I remember because I'm down in Virginia and I go to Busch Gardens, right?
Oh yeah.
And seriously, that anybody who's not thinking about, yeah, Lee Greenwood, I'm proud to be in that song, came out right after that because it was a tribute. And then
Willie Nelson was born.
they played that song in Busch Gardens, and everybody stopped and like took off their hats.
Yeah,
and
it was a very, very was, patriotic time.
Yeah,
these colors don't run.
Remember
those shirts? That was like the summer of these colors don't run.
Then it, like you said, then you know, led into, you know, the Bush years and the invasion of Iraq and the quote, the war on terror. But then, yeah, Iran, and I gave a little, what I said was going to be a teaser of going, people might be surprised. But to me, and I am glad that it seems to be that it's not going to be anything more potentially.
Well, nobody wins in war, man.
No, that's nobody wins. But I, you know, it's like for the longest time, it was just like, okay, if there are bad guys,
yeah,
it's about time we finally potentially identified and said, and again, when you say bad guys, there are people who live in that country that are incredibly good guys and good people and good kids. But yeah, I, you know, there's something about the whole idea of a movement of an ideology of people that run your country. And yeah, you might hear a parallel here, who seem to think that, you know, their existence tops the existence of everybody else around them. So I was really concerned though, potentially that would have turned into like a really existential type of, holy crap, what are we going to do? You know, and so, yeah, I don't necessarily think that taking out Iran's nuclear, not that I actually believe we actually did, but I don't think that that's necessarily a bad idea.
Tim, and I like Tim talking about this. Yeah, I like us talking about this. That was really good, man. Jacob's up on his old history here. You know, Tim, I like that point because it's not that, like, here's one level of distrust I have, mm-hmm. is our, at least our president, has doesn't have a great track record of telling the truth.
Right.
He tells us this because his own social media platform is titled The Truth, right? So, you know, it's like usually he was someone says, you know, that like, hey, I'm about to tell you the truth. You know, it's like a sarcasm way of going into a statement that's like, hey, I need you to believe me, even though nobody believes anything I say. So, I mean, he's not the most trustworthy guy, especially in his tweets.
Right.
And that's where I was getting a lot of my information from, was news reports of, you know, those tweets. But then also, Tim, you remember we went through this.
Right.
Then you said following Desert Shield, Desert Storm. We went through the accusation that the reason we needed to be on the ground in Iraq, the reason why, you know, we were glued to our televisions. I wasn't alive for the conflict in Vietnam, but I heard stories and had great teachers, right, who told me like unprecedented, like World War II had happened and different things, Korean conflict in our U.S. history. And you didn't see it televised the way that there were news reporters side by side with, there was journalist accounts of what was happening in Vietnam.
Right.
You know, really changed and was part of that whole war protest moment of seeing, you know, that this is not a joke. This is not, you know, a Hollywood production. But we were glued to our television sets for the ground invasion of Iraq, right? Watching the Humvees like through the sands there and into so-called getting into Baghdad. And the rationale for an all-out declaration of war was the nuclear bombs.
Nuclear.
Right? The nuclear weapons. Am I saying it wrong?
No, well, no, George, you got to say like George Bush, nuclear.
Yeah. And they turned out, right? They turned out to not have been there.
Right.
And so, you know, the levels of distrust, it might sound like, well, Tim and Johnny are on and they're just a couple of Trump haters. Well, yes, we are. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, just to be sort of fair about it, I kind of have, you know, a historical reference of experience with our government's proclamation or go to, well, they have nuclear weapons. It's almost like on the playground, right? Well, he pushed me first. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, I'm grateful that here we are, you know, a week and a half out from stuff and it hasn't escalated as quickly as I had worried it would or turned into. And hopefully this is a matter of diplomacy now.
I hope it is too, but you bring up a point, and I know, you know, everybody listening to Bust the Pencils. What do you look, this is educational, so just work with
absolutely.
Us. When we come back after the break, we'll get to it the way we normally do. But you brought up a point though, Johnny, where you say it's like, you know, the rationale for going to war, you know, particularly in our lifetime, like you said, is that there's kind of like going, okay, that's not really why we went, and we find that out. And so there's a distrust, right? And even that, it's like, yeah, Iraq, weapons of mass destruction. No, they didn't. But I also, at the time, you know, there was people going, it's like, look, Iraq doesn't, they're not the problem. If any problem exists, truly, it has always been Iran, and knowing that funding of terrorism, whatever, you know, but it's like, and so now potentially if this was, quote, somewhat or semi-justified, like you said, you and I are kind of tilted in the going, well, you say this is what you did it for and why you did it, but we have, you know, 58 years in my case of literally going, and you said you weren't, I was born in 67 and actually a little bit of memory, you know, by the time I was 8 or 9 years old of the coffins coming home from Vietnam, a little bit of memory, but realizing that even that was like, what were we there for? And so the, what were we there for kind of mentality that you and I carry around creates a real distrust and a doubt that whenever somebody says we had to do this, you start to go, well, I don't know. Did we? Because I got, you know, 40 plus years of me remembering that actually we didn't really go there for the reasons you said. And it seems to be upsetting, distrustful, and that's not good to create a citizenry that is, you know, along the lines of distrust isn't bad, but trust us, but hey, trust us, we'll be back.
Yeah, we definitely will.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Are you having trouble hearing? Hearing loss can devastate the quality of your life. Now, there's an affordable fix for you or your loved one. Rated the best hearing aids of 2025 by Forbes Health, Audion Hearing has the highest quality hearing aids at the lowest prices, starting at just $98 a pair.
I actually like them better than my old $5,000 hearing aid.
I could not believe how my hearing and life changed.
Join over 1 million happy customers by going to audionhearing.com. That's AudienHearing.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Years ago, I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, sure, you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
I love that bass line there. It sounds like when it comes in there. Hey, I told you, trust us, we'd be back. Here we are. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, Chairman of the Boards, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Yes, we are busting pencils. People driving around all through the Civic Media listening area. If you're listening to us right now on your radio, on your app, thank you. We appreciate it. If you're downloading this show, hey, we like you too. We don't play favorites. We just appreciate everybody. But, you know, I always like to imagine somebody out there in their car right now going, hey, Tim just said hi to me. I appreciate that. So, John, you know, that's
well, yeah, Tim, and I'll be honest, I play favorites. If you're a fan of Civic Media, well, then I'm a big fan of you. So
there you go.
I'll be the guy who plays favorites. I also play favorites around, you know, that. You're out there exercising your civic responsibility by doing whatever it is you do today while you're listening, whether it's a weekday or a weekend, mm-hmm. You know, you're part of it. It's like we, the people, that's the core of democracy and education. As we often say, Tim, it's the bedrock of democracy. So talking education and talking all things related, right? Which current events we started off the hour with, you know, our past couple of weeks, if we were in classrooms, you know, school's out for summer, but if we were in classrooms, social studies teachers would be navigating the what's happening in the world question and teaching current events. And it's always, it's never a favorite lesson, but it seems though it's rather frequent, whether it was us teaching about Ukraine or what's happening in Gaza in the last few years, you know, but violent conflict around the world is always a tough but real lessons that social studies teachers have, you know, in their toolbox.
Yeah.
You know, always age appropriate and developmentally appropriate. But, you know, whether it's young people that you're reminding them that it is the work of grown folks all around the world to make sure that we're safe and that families and children are safe everywhere, and assure them that, you know, they're safe, and that diplomacy is always one of the best outcomes that we can hope for. And I'm hoping for it, Tim. It seems as though we're in a moment of some diplomacy, and maybe that's me being a little more optimistic.
We'll take it though when it's there. You know, we put it there. But Johnny, okay, I, you know, short segment here. We know this, and you know, you guys, you know, stay tuned, listen tight. So I want to set up though where we're gonna make this pivot, because our, you know, we're gonna get back into education. And last week we talked a lot about actually giving an example from the second year law student who decided to say that originalists and white people are awesome, and therefore it's illegal for anybody to participate except for white people. Okay, right, great. And we talked about, well, we had the example though that when students, you know, back a few, you know, maybe a decade or so ago when you were teaching, when I was teaching, some students that actually put forward kind of a racist tilt or a racist tint, and we called them on it because our accreditors were one of those things where we said in teacher education, anti-racist teaching was required by our accreditor. And so we felt that we had the ability to step in and, again, not fail the student, but educate them on potentially the fact that they're presenting what could be a racist viewpoint, and that could they reconsider? Is there a way to talk about it? And then realizing that, boy, in today's world, that might not work. And here we are now in, you know, we knew this was coming. We talked about it, you know, the whole accreditation system now in higher education is fully under attack, because six states partner to launch a new accreditor. And this is being driven, of course, by one of our favorite governors, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, putting together this new higher education, public higher education accreditation system, largely, as he points out and says, because we need to get rid of the woke indoctrination system stranglehold that the current accreditation system has on American public higher education. And therefore, we are going to create a new accreditation system that will be, and I love this, will be focused on student achievement and not woke indoctrination, woke ideology, and all of that stuff. And I got to think about this. I want to, again, frame this from the standpoint of going, I got to tell you, deep down in my soul, I hate accreditation. I got to tell you.
Anybody telling you what to do.
Well, I don't. And some of the arguments that DeSantis and the anti-accrediting people make, they've co-opted legitimate concerns, I think, with the accreditation system, in that potentially, and I think, you know, this to me is also a sign of the accreditors not realizing that the world is changing and they themselves need to adapt. And I will say that my criticism of teacher education, I'm going to keep it where I know, my criticism of teacher education accreditation, CAPE, AQIP, you name it, really, I put it to the forward and saying, first of all, I never met a principal who ever hired a teacher because they were from an accredited college. So therefore, it doesn't carry that much weight because principals don't know about it. The other part was, I've never come out of an accreditation process where everybody went, wow, that was awesome. And in fact, the person who led it is typically hated by the rest of the college at that point. And more importantly, though, What is accreditation doing? And teacher education accreditation during the teacher shortage could care less as far as I was concerned. And that was one of the reasons that, hey, step up and be relevant. What are you doing for the moment in the realities? Johnny, setting up the context so when we get back, you can either rip me apart or add some more. Loving everybody listening. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back after a minute.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief Weather Prediction Center meteorologist Alliston Santarelli says more heavy rain is falling in parts of Texas, but not directly on the area of recent deadly flash flooding.
Ongoing right now, just to the northeast of where they saw the catastrophic flooding, we're seeing significant rainfall again.
The death toll from the flooding near San Antonio has now reached 27. The U.S. is considering giving powerful weapons to a beleaguered ally. Here's CBS's Willie James Inman.
The president told reporters that he's considering sending the Patriot air defense missiles to Ukraine. That is something that they have been asking for.
Hamas appears to be receptive to a truce proposal for Gaza, says CBS's Deborah Patta from Jerusalem.
For Palestinians in Gaza, a glimmer of hope, with a renewed momentum for a ceasefire. Since the last truce collapsed in March, 6,000 more people have died and an acute humanitarian crisis has worsened.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
It's the Brewers and the Marlins today. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game 2 of the Brewers and Marlins in Florida this afternoon. The crew winning last night 6-5, thanks to Jackson Churio driving in Christian Yelich to score. Joey Ortiz with a two-run single to take the lead. Aaron Ashby out of the bullpen got the win, retiring all seven batters he faced. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Ashby was tremendous. The fact that he can face both lefties and righties. He gets himself beat when he doesn't field his position or doesn't hold runners or things like that. But he's... you know, he's got, we've seen it. When he's in the pen like this, his stuff is, you know, you saw it, 97, 99, and this makes everything better. He's got the ability, and I think that's the best role for him right now in his career.
NBA, who will the Bucks replace Damian Lillard at the point guard position? ESPN reporting today, the Bucks have been in talks with Chris Paul. He's now 40 and a free agent after 1 year with the Spurs. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Devil Wears Prada is coming back, but not every cast member will return. The production started last week on Prada 2. Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, and Stanley Tucci are all back. Adrian Grenier, however, will not be back as Nate Cooper in the sequel. He played Anne Hathaway's love interest and a short order cook in the first film. Grenier's claim to fame is, of course, the show Entourage, but he has not done much since. In other casting news, actor Kenneth Branagh will join the production as Meryl Streep's character, Miranda Priestley's husband. There's a new action comedy that might be worth a look. Heads of State tells the story of the UK Prime Minister, played by Idris Elba, and the United States President, played by John Cena, which seems more realistic than it's ever been. The two characters butt heads but have to team up to overthrow a global plot that threatens freedom. The film is receiving a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 85% audience score and can be streamed on Amazon Prime. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and thunderstorms today, some with pockets of heavy rainfall. Highs in the mid-80s. For tonight, showers and thunderstorms, again, some with heavy rain. A low around 62. Clearing out, sunny for Sunday with a high near 79. Monday, mostly sunny, 79.
It's 73 at our studios.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll review the holiday weekend. Hope yours has been good. Also, Kristen Lyerly, John and Gordy, and Jane Matinere will join us as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Oh, yeah. When you do that, when you hear that music, make sure your head is far enough away from the nearest wall so you don't really go through with what could be a real painful experience. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, education talk, educated educators, talking education, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Okay, Johnny, I was trying to set the scene for accreditation. Yeah. DeSantis, hey, man, these woke accreditors, we're doing away with them. We're making our own. I kind of let in a little bit of my frustration with accreditation. I know you got a kind of a rebuttal, I think. Or,
well, yeah, first, given the story that we're looking at, we're not shocked by this as people in higher education or anywhere in education. Remember, education is a state right, and it's in large governed by local government. Which, whether it's your state government or your local school district, school boards, i.e. those kinds of things, usually there's a state superintendency office, right? And that's sort of like the head of, what do we need to do as programs, right? What are the courses that students need to take? Are we teaching great? Do we give meaningful assignments? All the little details. I'm a fan of accreditation, Tim. It might shock you. I've had both awful experiences with it in some of the larger, more federally, organized third-party kind of, I'll call them companies, corporations, right, that seemed less interested in our students and then us and more interested in, providing a service, which is an important service. Like, I think to be accredited is important. You have to have a system of checks and balance in anything. You have to show that you are experts in your craft or trade. And that's, looking at any industry, right? You have to have, if you own a restaurant, you have to pass health codes, right? It's not anything goes. Same thing in education. Like, you have to have an outside sort of an audit, we might say, a group that comes in and observes, takes a look at what you do. Probably talks to some teachers, talks to students, looks at examples of student work, looks at the programs and the policies and everything, and for the everyday listener who's not in education or familiar with accreditation, it's a lot like being audited, right? They just go through everything. And that can be a painful experience in terms of it can sometimes not make sense. Like, you may have had that experience, Tim, like, why are you looking at what you're looking at? That stuff, it's not really important to what's happening for teachers or for our students in context. And so accreditation, it's something that can be great. It's something that can be awful. When it's great, I'll focus on that. I'm the optimist. When it's great, it is a wonderful opportunity to get feedback on what you're doing, right? Like, hey, these are interesting courses that you're offering. Here are some practices and policies that we've noticed as accreditors at your peer institutions or at other places you might want to consider, or kind of gives you a list for improvement. As a coach, I'm a big fan of coaching, right? So kind of in its best format, but the best experiences I've had with accreditation are when I'm getting great feedback on my teaching and on my, the programs that I'm a part of, the university departments that I work in and how we're doing, gives us a little bit of feedback we have the evidence. We know how our students are doing and what they're doing out in industry. But a great accreditor often has people also from industry, you know, observing and looking at what you're doing to say, yep, actually, this is aligned with the kinds of things we're struggling with out in the field. Like whether it's, you know, we're talking about teaching, having teachers as part of the accreditors or other principals and people in education. So when it's good, it's really great. Just like any kind of coaching. When you have a good coach, you're getting better. And I like to say that every time I get in the classroom, I'd like to get better at teaching.
Okay. Right?
And so it's been a helpful tool in that process. Now that said, it's also like an audit can be, it can be punitive and not formative. It can be not good coaching, just like you might be on a team with a bad coach and then nobody gets better and everyone hates their job more at the end of it. And unfortunately, Tim, I will agree with you. I think there are more bad accreditors, like people that don't necessarily partner.
You mean people working for the accreditation firms?
Firms and organizations that they lose that focus of, you know, hey, we're here to take something that's going pretty good and make it better. Yeah. Right. And so that's important. Now, I'm not shocked at all about DeSantis because
I was going to say, let's bring it back here because I got a theory.
That gives context for a listener who's saying, like, wait, what's this accreditation thing Tim's talking about? But the DeSantis thing is like modern day, it's contemporary McCarthyism. You know, it's the next step. And well, you know, like we were joking, and it's not actually a light matter, but that's us, Tim. We make jokes. You know, we talked about there weren't nuclear weapons in Iraq after all, you know, did the whole invasion and Desert Storm. And yeah, Saddam Hussein was an awful dictator and did awful things that no leader should do. So set that aside, but there weren't necessarily those weapons of mass destruction, especially the nuclear capabilities that, you know, were leveraged as rationale or reason. You know, this whole idea about woke teachers and woke indoctrination, it's a dog whistle, you know, for the people who have unfortunately grown in mass to believe that, especially colleges, but even I hear it more. I hear that term woke teacher more at the K-12 level. You know, it's not as much in the media. The media talks about higher ed as woke indoctrination, but I hear it often, you know, in terms of good, referring to good teaching. I mean, teachers that are really inclusive, teachers that care about all their students, teachers, you know, that are saying, hey, you know, I would not like there to be ICE raids in my school, right? That all of a sudden classifies them immediately as you're either woke or not woke in schools. And look, last time I checked, I wanted my kid's teacher to be awake. So if we're going to be literal about things, you know, I want them to be awake, not asleep at the wheel, not asleep, but awake. But you know, it's become sort of a coded language for saying like, well, that's woke. Well, that's woke stuff. You know, that's liberal indoctrination. And you know, when challenged by it, like Tim, you and I were when we were talking about the hate speech paper written in Florida, that challenged free speech and brought a great conversation to busted pencils around what's the difference between free speech and academic freedom, and when does something that's free speech cross over into hate speech, and how can hate speech or how is hate speech, you know, harmful? It actually is, and it's not allowed, you know, on our campuses, but free speech is, and those kinds of messy conversations that are part of democracy. Well, how can you have free speech but not allow hate speech? Well, hate speech crosses a line where it brings, you know, violent threat to groups of people or individuals, and that's not part of being included into a safe opportunity to be learning. But the same kind of thing when we said on that show, Tim, we talked about, well, but we aren't exactly even always necessarily teaching our own beliefs. That's bad teaching. We are held accountable by our accreditors or by our state agencies that have laws, especially at the state level, that say, here is what scientific consensus is on what a healthy education ought to include. Maybe that's like a holistic health and wellness curriculum that includes sex ed. Oh no, about sex, that's woke. You know, so when we say, hey, this is what we're required to do, Well, then the next step is for someone like DeSantis, who's doing that witch hunt, that digging. Well, it would make a lot of sense that he says, well, if you really want to change things, well, we have to go after these accreditation agencies, and we have to make sure the people doing the accrediting, you know, aren't woke. So of course he's trying to implement new accreditation agencies and firms.
Let's go back to the reality that we presented again last week. Guess what? Yeah, all of my, I won't say hate speech toward accreditation, but my positioning. But one of the things we talked about back in it, we used the accreditor to say you can't be a racist future teacher. And let's be honest, what DeSantis and all these people who are going after accreditors are really going after is the fact that actually a lot of accreditation in higher education has stipulations about not being a racist. And they've now turned that into, you know, hey, Johnny and Tim were forced by their accreditor to be a racist by confronting a racist. And so now we're going to make our own accreditation system to fight woke indoctrination. And let's be honest, so we can install anti-woke indoctrination through the accreditation system. Let's be real that this is what this is. This is, you used to have your accreditors that would require you to be gentle, trustworthy, scientific, upholding human beings. We don't like that. We're going to call that woke ideology. We're going to get rid of the accreditation system. We're going to install our own accreditation system, and we're going to hold you to our new standards, which, and this is the frightening thing about going, because I know you're saying we're going to make it about student achievement. No, you're going to come after people teaching tolerance, people teaching about diversity, people talking about the reality of the scientific consensus behind climate change and the unsustainable ways that we typically go after energy. You're going after those things that actually, John, you say scientific consensus, human attitudes towards being an ethical, wonderful human being. You don't like that. You've classified it as woke ideology, and now you're coming after it, and you're going to install an accreditation system that is going to uphold your standards. And from what I've seen from DeSantis and all of the anti-woke crusaders is that they're really just looking to install their own system of indoctrination, and I don't really want to say that what you and I were engaged in, we were being held to hold standards of whether scientific consensus, morality, the reality. They're going to install a system, and let's just stay with straight science, that if you teach about climate change being a human impacted situation, you will lose your accreditation. And so they're going to use the hammer of accreditation in one way to beat up and install unscientific consensus and immorality.
And this is on par. I mean, we're seeing this with RFK Jr.'s, the disagreement people at the CDC, Center for Disease, right, are saying with like, hey, this is a huge step against what we know to be health and healthy, you know. So it's on par for the course of, you know, this political group. But Tim, I'm with you. It's a form of utilizing a system of checks and balance for your own political views that in this case happen to be against scientific consensus, which is about as apolitical as it can get.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, one more round. Come on back with us.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee, on June 7th, presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's Independence Resolution word for word. Resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Veal.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Really dancing like normal, but you know, hey, I was outside, 96 degrees, cutting grass. I'm tired, man. It's hot out there. But Johnny, okay, yeah, let's I know we're coming up here, but you were saying something during the break that made me, you know, kind of go, okay, look, accreditation is a statement of values. And the choice of, quote, accreditor kind of tells us about your value system. And if they're creating a new accreditation system and it's, quote, in defiance of anti-woke indoctrination, because they're saying that's the current value system, then what I would want people to be asking the question is going, so what value system will they be installing through this new accreditation system? And I don't want anybody to go, well, we'll have to see and wait and understand. No, you don't. We know what they want higher education to be doing, and they want higher education to be engaging in academic dishonesty. They really want academic dishonesty. And you said your CDC thing is like, look, you know, we're just going to have scientists on the other side of the vaccine debate. No, there are scientists who are anti-vaxxers, but there's not an other side of the vaccine debate. You're installing a value system by putting that forward that is actually going to harm us because you have an ideology not based in science. And then let's go a little bit further. I'm sorry, but Johnny, we've talked about it. We're going to be looking at some form of an installation of a white Christian nationalist viewpoint. And people, look, if you're a good Christian, that's great. But installing that in higher education's job is never and should never be to implement and install a religion. It was one of the great accomplishments was separating out the academy from religious indoctrination, being separated from the political powers that had made higher education horrendous, that created the Dark Ages. My goodness, people, come on, hold your values, be a good person, practice your religion faithfully, have the passion you have, but do not believe that what's happening here is some form of reimagining and holding close to your Christian values. This is actually upending our world view that understands that we have a lot more evolving to do.
And it's also just not true. I mean, that's the other thing about it is it, one of the great signifiers of a strong democracy, which I'd like to believe our country to be. And that's always a work in progress. But, you know, even in these difficult times, we are a democracy. And one of the signifiers of that is strong public education systems and included in that higher education, places where like people with different views on the world come together on a common good and learn together, learn things that are in the best interest of the strength of that nation, of our world, of our futures together on this planet. And so, you know, the false accusation that, well, there's all these woke teachers doing like political indoctrinating out there because they're not aligned with the viewpoints of, we'll say it here, like you said, white Christian nationalism. It doesn't mean that schools don't teach about what that is or don't welcome people with those beliefs into schools. It's just that it's not part of democratic growth. It's not part of having a free public education. I don't mean free at the cost. I mean like like with freedom and liberty, a public education system that explores ideas through balance and through like holding us all accountable to a common good. That doesn't belong to woke people or not woke. The whole woke litmus test thing is just a way of saying the choice of no choice. We want to do political indoctrination, but we're actually going to accuse schools of doing it and then force everybody in schools to do that. So, you know, it's not a new play out of the playbook. You know, it's like we went through this with McCarthyism. We've gone through this over and over again. We went through it with consumerism and high stakes tests. Tim, that was a big chunk of our teaching time. Was like, hey, you know what? We actually are part owners of these testing companies and these curriculum companies, and they're going to utilize government power and these accreditation agencies to say, well, if you want to get accredited, you got to buy these curriculums, use them, and administer these tests. And they also happen to cost a lot of money. So, you know, they're manufacturing customers out of our public school system, and we were up in arms about that. Now we've just completely gone to the tomfoolery, to the malarkey of, well, there's all these woke teachers. First of all, there aren't. Second of all, even if they were and they were teaching best interest, let's get it. Wait, I heard thunder.
Yes, you did, man, because is not life miserable enough? Comes not death soon enough without resort to the hideous enginery of war? Jacob with the moment has been there.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's broadcast. If you want to grab more Busted Pencils podcast, well, you just go on over to Apple, Spotify, or you could always get at us at civicmedia.com or at our website, bustedpencils.com. And you can always find great Busted Pencils content like today's show on Mondays for Homeroom, Wednesdays for Class and Session, and on Fridays for Producers Jacob's Choice. And of course, Pencil Busters, you can always tune in and listen to the Busted Pencils weekend broadcast on Saturdays, 3 p.m. Central Time across all the civic media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny. And keep busting pencils.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The wait is agonizing for the parents of between 23 and 27 girls missing from a sleepaway summer camp near San Antonio. It happened in flash flooding yesterday. The confirmed death toll from the flooding is now 27, and many more are missing. But CBS's Jason Allen says rescuers aren't giving up.
This is still being called an active rescue mission. There have been helicopter teams and boat teams going up the Guadalupe River. They're having to sort through, work around these huge piles of debris, and they have even been scanning the treetops looking for people who may still be waiting to be rescued.
The river rose 26 feet in 45 minutes. Investigators will be working for some time trying to find the cause of a massive explosion of fireworks in California. Here's CBS's Carter Evans.
Investigators say human remains have now been found where